is wanted to capture her.
Frank Jong!
An ogre shouted from below. He was bigger than the rest, wearing a lion's cape like a Roman standard-bearer and a plastic bib with a lobster on it.
Come down, son of Mars. We've been waiting for you. Come be our honored guest.
Hazel gripped Frank's arm. Why do I get the feeling that honored guest means the same thing as dinner? Frank wished Mars were still there. He could use somebody to snap his fingers and make his battle jitters go away. Hazel believes in me, he thought. I can do this. He looked at Percy.
Can you drive?
Sure. Why?
Grandmother's car's in the garage. It's an old Cadillac. The thing is like a tank. If you can get it started...
We'll still have to break through a line of ogres, Hazel said.
The sprinkler system, Percy said. Use it as a distraction?
Exactly, Frank said. I'll buy you as much time as I can. Get Ella and get in the car. I'll try to meet you in the garage. But don't wait for me.
Percy frowned.
Frank.
Give us your answer, Frank Jong, the ogre yelled up. Come down, and we will spare the others. Your friends, your poor old granny. We only want you.
They're lying, Percy muttered.
Yeah, I got that, Frank agreed.
Go!
His friends ran for the ladder. Frank tried to control the beating of his heart. He grinned and yelled,
Hey down there! Who's hungry?
The ogres cheered as Frank paced along the widow's walk and waved like a rock star. Frank tried to summon his family power. He imagined himself as a fire-breathing dragon. He strained and clenched his fist and thought about dragons so hard, beads of sweat popped up on his forehead. He wanted to sweep down on the enemy and destroy them. That would be extremely cool. But nothing happened. He had no clue how to change himself. He had never even seen a real dragon. For a panicky moment, he wondered if Grandmother had played some sort of cruel joke on him. Maybe he'd misunderstood the gift. Maybe Frank was the only member of the family who hadn't inherited it. That would be just his luck. The ogres started to become restless. The cheering turned to catcalls. A few Lestragonians hefted their cannonballs.
Hold on,
Frank yelled. You don't want to char me, do you? I won't taste very good that way.
Come down, they yelled. Hungry.
Time for Plan B. Frank just wished he had one.
Do you promise to spare my friends?
Frank asked.
Do you swear on the River Styx?
The ogres laughed. One threw a cannonball that arced over Frank's head and blew up the chimney. By some miracle, Frank wasn't hit with shrapnel.
I'll take that as a no, he muttered.
Then he shouted down, Okay, fine. You win. I'll be right down.
Wait there!
The ogres cheered, but their leader in the lion's skin cape scowled suspiciously. Frank wouldn't have much time. He descended the ladder into the attic. Ella was gone. He hoped that was a good sign. Maybe they'd gotten her to the Cadillac. He grabbed an extra quiver of arrows labeled Assorted Varieties in his mother's neat printing. Then he ran to the machine gun. He swiveled the barrel, took aim at the lead ogre, and pressed the trigger. 8 high-powered spuds blasted the giant in the chest, propelling him backward with such force that he crashed into a stack of bronze cannonballs, which promptly exploded, leaving a smoking crater in the yard. Apparently starch was bad for ogres. While the rest of the monsters ran around in confusion, Frank pulled his bow and rained arrows on them. Some of the missiles detonated on impact. Others splintered like buckshot and left the giants with some painful new tattoos. One hit an ogre and instantly turned him into a potted rose bush. Unfortunately, the ogres recovered quickly. They began throwing cannonballs, dozens at a time. The whole house groaned under the impact. Frank ran for the stairs. The attic disintegrated behind him. Smoke and fire poured down the second-floor hallway.
"Grandmother!"
he cried. But the heat was so intense, he couldn't reach her room. He raced to the ground floor, clinging to the banister as the house shook and huge chunks of the ceiling collapsed. The base of the staircase was a smoking crater. He leaped over it and stumbled through the kitchen. Choking from the ash and soot, he burst into the garage. The Cadillac's headlights were on. The engine was running and the garage door was opening.
"Get in!" Percy yelled.
Frank dove in the back next to Hazel. Ella was curled up in the front, her head tucked under her wings, muttering,
"Yikes, yikes, yikes."
Percy gunned the engine. They shot out of the garage before it was fully open, leaving a Cadillac-shaped hole of splintered wood. The ogres ran to intercept, but Percy shouted at the top of his lungs, and the irrigation system exploded. 100 geysers shot into the air along with clods of dirt, pieces of pipe, and very heavy sprinkler heads. The Cadillac was going about 40 when they hit the first ogre, who disintegrated on impact. By the time the other monsters overcame their confusion, the Cadillac was half a mile down the road. Flaming cannonballs burst behind them. Frank glanced back and saw his family mansion on fire, the walls collapsing inward and smoke billowing into the sky. He saw a large black speck, maybe a buzzard, circling up from the fire. It might have been Frank's imagination, but he thought it had flown out of the second-story window.
"Grandmother?" he murmured.
It seemed impossible, but she had promised she would die in her own way, not at the hands of the ogres. Frank hoped she had been right. They drove through the woods and headed north.
"About 3 miles," Frank said. "You can't miss it."
Behind them, more explosions ripped through the forest. Smoke boiled into the sky.
"How fast can Lestragonians run?" Hazel asked.
"Let's not find out," Percy said.
The gates of the airfield appeared before them, only a few hundred yards away. A private jet idled on the runway. Its stairs were down. The Cadillac hit a pothole and went airborne. Frank's head slammed into the ceiling. When the wheels touched the ground, Percy floored the brakes and they swerved to a stop just inside the gates. Frank climbed out and drew his bow.
"Get to the plane! They're coming!"
The Lestragonians were closing in with alarming speed. The first line of ogres burst out of the woods and barreled toward the airfield. 500 yards away. 400 yards. Percy and Hazel managed to get Ella out of the Cadillac, but as soon as the harpy saw the airplane, she began to shriek.
No, she yelped. "Fly with wings. No airplanes."
"It's okay," Hazel promised. "We'll protect you."
Ella made a horrible, painful wail like she was being burned. Percy held up his hands in exasperation.
"What do we do? We can't force her."
"No,"
Frank agreed. The ogres were 300 yards out.
"She's too valuable to leave behind," Hazel said.
Then she winced at her own words.
"Gods, I'm sorry, Ella. I sound as bad as Phineas. You're a living thing, not a treasure."
"No planes. No planes."
Ella was hyperventilating. The ogres were almost in throwing distance. Percy's eyes lit up.
"I've got an idea. Ella, can you hide in the woods? Will you be safe from the ogres?"
"Hide,"
she agreed.
"Safe. Hiding is good for harpies. Ella is quick and small and fast."
"Okay," Percy said. "Just stay around this area. I can send a friend to meet you and take you to Camp Jupiter."
Frank unslung his bow and knocked an arrow.
"A friend?"
Percy waved his hand in a tell-you-later gesture.
"Ella, would you like that? Would you like my friend to take you to Camp Jupiter and show you our home?"
"Camp,"
Ella muttered. Then in Latin,
"Wisdom's daughter walks alone. The mark of Athena burns through Rome."
Right, Percy said. "That sounds important, but we can talk about that later. You'll be safe at camp. All the books and food you want."
"No planes,"
she insisted.
"No planes," Percy agreed.
"Ella will hide now."
Just like that, she was gone, a red streak disappearing into the woods.
"I'll miss her," Hazel said sadly.
"We'll see her again," Percy promised,
but he frowned uneasily, as if he were really troubled by that last bit of prophecy, the thing about Athena. An explosion sent the airfield's gates spinning into the air. Frank tossed his grandmother's letter to Percy.
"Show that to the pilot! Show him your letter from Raina, too! We've got to take off now!"
Percy nodded. He and Hazel ran for the plane. Frank took cover behind the Cadillac and started firing at the ogres. He targeted the largest clump of enemies and shot a tulip-shaped arrow. Just as he'd hoped, it was a hydra. Ropes lashed out like squid tentacles, and the entire front row of ogres plowed face first into the dirt. Frank heard the plane's engines rev. He shot three more arrows as fast as he could, blasting enormous craters in the ogres' ranks. The survivors were only 100 yards away, and some of the brighter ones stumbled to a stop, realizing that they were now within hurling range.
"Frank!" Hazel shrieked. "Come on!"
A fiery cannonball hurtled toward him in a slow arc. Frank knew instantly it was going to hit the plane. He knocked an arrow.
"I can do this," he thought.
He let the arrow fly. It intercepted the cannonball midair, detonating a massive fireball. Another 2 cannonballs sailed toward him. Frank ran. Behind him, metal groaned as the Cadillac exploded. He dove into the plane just as the stairs started to rise. The pilot must have understood the situation just fine. There was no safety announcement, no pre-flight drink, and no waiting for clearance. He pushed the throttle and the plane shot down the runway. Another blast ripped through the runway behind them, but then they were in the air. Frank looked down and saw the airstrip riddled with craters like a piece of burning Swiss cheese. Swaths of Lynn Canyon Park were on fire. A few miles to the south, a swirling pyre of flames and black smoke was all that remained of the Jong family mansion. So much for Frank being impressive. He'd failed to save his grandmother. He'd failed to use his powers. He hadn't even saved their harpy friend. When Vancouver disappeared in the clouds below, Frank buried his head in his hands and started to cry. The plane banked to the left. Over the intercom, the pilot's voice said,
"Senatus populusque Romanus, my friends. Welcome aboard. Next stop, Anchorage, Alaska."
Chapter 37. Percy. Airplanes or cannibals? No contest. Percy would have preferred driving Grandma Jong's Cadillac all the way to Alaska with fireball-throwing ogres on his tail rather than sitting in a luxury Gulfstream. He'd flown before. The details were hazy, but he remembered a Pegasus named Blackjack. He'd even been in a plane once or twice, but a son of Neptune, Poseidon, whatever, didn't belong in the air. Every time the plane hit a spot of turbulence, Percy's heart raced, and he was sure Jupiter was slapping them around. He tried to focus as Frank and Hazel talked. Hazel was reassuring Frank that he'd done everything he could for his grandmother. Frank had saved them from the Laestrygonians and gotten them out of Vancouver. He'd been incredibly brave. Frank kept his head down like he was ashamed to have been crying, but Percy didn't blame him. The poor guy had just lost his grandmother and seen his house go up in flames. As far as Percy was concerned, shedding a few tears about something like that didn't make you any less of a man, especially when you had just fended off an army of ogres that wanted to eat you for breakfast. Percy still couldn't get over the fact that Frank was a distant relative. Frank would be his, what, great times a thousand nephew? Too weird for words. Frank refused to explain exactly what his family gift was, but as they flew north, Frank did tell them about his conversation with Mars the night before. He explained the prophecy Juno had issued when he was a baby, about his life being tied to a piece of firewood, and how he had asked Hazel to keep it for him. Some of that, Percy had already figured out. Hazel and Frank had obviously shared some crazy experiences when they had blacked out together, and they'd made some sort of deal. It also explained why even now, out of habit, Frank kept checking his coat pocket, and why he was so nervous around fire. Still, Percy couldn't imagine what kind of courage it had taken for Frank to embark on a quest, knowing that one small flame could snuff out his life.
"Frank," he said, "I'm proud to be related to you."
Frank's ears turned red. With his head lowered, his military haircut made a sharp black arrow pointing down.
"Juno has some sort of plan for us, about the prophecy of 7.
"Yeah," Percy grumbled. "I didn't like her as Hera. I don't like her any better as Juno."
Hazel tucked her feet underneath her. She studied Percy with her luminescent golden eyes, and he wondered how she could be so calm. She was the youngest one on the quest, but she was always holding them together and comforting them. Now they were flying to Alaska, where she had died once before. They would try to free Thanatos, who might take her back to the underworld, yet she didn't show any fear. It made Percy feel silly for being scared of airplane turbulence.
"You're a son of Poseidon, aren't you?" she asked. "You are a Greek demigod."
Percy gripped his leather necklace. "I started to remember in Portland, after the Gorgon's blood. It's been coming back to me slowly since then. There's another camp. Camp Half-Blood."
Just saying the name made Percy feel warm inside. Good memories washed over him. The smell of strawberry fields in the warm summer sun, fireworks lighting up the beach on the 4th of July, satyrs playing panpipes at the nightly campfire, and a kiss at the bottom of the canoe lake. Hazel and Frank stared at him as though he'd slipped into another language.
"Another camp?" Hazel repeated. "A Greek camp? Gods, if Octavian found out..."
"He'd declare war," Frank said. "He's always been sure the Greeks were out there, plotting against us. He thought Percy was a spy."
"That's why Juno sent me," Percy said. Not to spy. I think it was some kind of exchange. Your friend Jason, I think he was sent to my camp. In my dreams, I saw a demigod that might have been him. He was working with some other demigods on this flying warship. I think they're coming to Camp Jupiter to help."
Frank tapped nervously on the back of his seat. "Mars said Juno wants to unite the Greeks and Romans to fight Gia. But geez, Greeks and Romans have a long history of bad blood."
Hazel took a deep breath.
"That's probably why the gods have kept us apart this long. If a Greek warship appeared in the sky above Camp Jupiter, and Reyna didn't know it was friendly..."
"Yeah," Percy agreed. "We've got to be careful how we explain this when we get back."
"If we get back," Frank said. Percy nodded reluctantly.
I trust you guys. I hope you trust me. I feel as close to you two as to any of my old friends at Camp Half-Blood. But with the other demigods, at both camps, there's going to be a lot of suspicion."
Hazel did something he wasn't expecting. She leaned over and kissed him on the cheek. It was totally a sisterly kiss, but she smiled with such affection it warmed Percy right down to his feet.
"Of course we trust you," she said. "We're a family now, aren't we, Frank?"
"Sure," he said. "Do I get a kiss?"
Hazel laughed, but there was nervous tension in it.
"Anyway, what do we do now?"
Percy took a deep breath. Time was slipping away. They were almost halfway through June 23rd, and tomorrow was the Feast of Fortuna.
"I've got to contact a friend, to keep my promise to Ella."
"How?" Frank said. "One of those iris messages?"
"Still not working," Percy said sadly. "I tried it last night at your grandmother's house. No luck. Maybe it's because my memories are still jumbled, or the gods aren't allowing a connection. I'm hoping I can contact my friend in my dreams."
Another bump of turbulence made him grab his seat. Below them, snow-capped mountains broke through a blanket of clouds.
"I'm not sure I can sleep," Percy said, "but I need to try. We can't leave Ella by herself with those ogres around."
"Yeah," Frank said. "We've still got hours to fly."
"Take the couch, man."
Percy nodded. He felt lucky to have Hazel and Frank watching out for him. What he'd said to them was true. He trusted them. In the weird, terrifying, horrible experience of losing his memory and getting ripped out of his old life, Hazel and Frank were the bright spots. He stretched out, closed his eyes, and dreamed he was falling from a mountain of ice toward a cold sea. The dream shifted. He was back in Vancouver, standing in front of the ruins of the Jong Mansion. The Laestrygonians were gone. The mansion was reduced to a burned-out shell. A crew of firefighters was packing up their equipment, getting ready to move out. The lawn looked like a war zone, with smoking craters and trenches from the blown-out irrigation pipes. At the edge of the forest, a giant shaggy black dog was bounding around, sniffing the trees. The firefighters completely ignored him.
Beside one of the craters knelt a cyclops in oversized jeans, boots, and a massive flannel shirt. His messy brown hair was spattered with rain and mud. When he raised his head, his big brown eye was red from crying.
"Close,"
he moaned.
"So close, but gone."
It broke Percy's heart to hear the pain and worry in the big guy's voice, but he knew they only had a few seconds to talk. The edges of the vision were already dissolving. If Alaska was the land beyond the gods, Percy figured the farther north he went, the harder it would be to communicate with his friends, even in his dreams.
"Tyson!" he called.
The Cyclops looked around frantically.
"Percy? Brother?"
"Tyson, I'm okay. I'm here. Well, not really."
Tyson grabbed the air like he was trying to catch butterflies.
"Can't see you. Where is my brother?"
"Tyson, I'm flying to Alaska. I'm okay. I'll be back. Just find Ella. She's a harpy with red feathers. She's hiding in the woods around the house."
"Find a harpy? A red harpy?"
"Yes. Protect her, okay? She's my friend. Get her back to California. There's a demigod camp in the Oakland Hills, Camp Jupiter. Meet me above the Caldecott Tunnel."
"Oakland Hills, California. Caldecott Tunnel."
He shouted to the dog.
"Mrs. O'Leary, we must find a harpy."
"Woof,"
said the dog. Tyson's face started to dissolve.
"My brother is okay? My brother is coming back? I miss you."
"I miss you too," Percy tried to keep his voice from cracking. "I'll see you soon. Just be careful. There's a giant's army marching south. Tell Annabeth."
The dream shifted. Percy found himself standing in the hills north of Camp Jupiter, looking down at the field of Mars and New Rome. At the Legion's fort, horns were blowing. Campers scrambled to muster. The giant's army was arrayed to Percy's left and right. Centaurs with bull's horns, the six-armed earthborn, and evil cyclopes in scrap metal armor. The cyclopes' siege tower cast a shadow across the feet of the giant Polybetes, who grinned down at the Roman camp. He paced eagerly across the hill, snakes dropping from his green dreadlocks, his dragon legs stomping down small trees. On his green-blue armor, the decorative faces of hungry monsters seemed to blink in the shadows.
"Yes,"
he chuckled, planting his trident in the ground.
"Blow your little horns, Romans. I've come to destroy you. Sleto!"
The Gorgon scrambled out of the bushes. Her lime-green viper hair and bargain-mart vest clashed horribly with the giant's color scheme.
"Yes, master,"
she said.
"Would you like a puppy in a blanket?"
She held up a tray of free samples.
"Hmm," Polybetes said. "What sort of puppy?"
"Ah, they're not actually puppies. They're tiny hot dogs and crescent rolls, but they're on sale this week."
"Bah! Never mind, then. Are our forces ready to attack?"
"Oh."
Stheno stepped back quickly to avoid getting flattened by the giant's foot.
"Almost, great one. Ma Gasket and half her cyclopes stopped in Napa. Something about a winery tour? They promised to be here by tomorrow evening."
"What?"
The giant looked around as if just noticing that a big portion of his army was missing.
"Ugh, that cyclops woman will give me an ulcer. Winery tour?"
"I think there was cheese and crackers, too," Stheno said helpfully. "Though Bargain Mart has a much better deal."
Polybetes ripped an oak tree out of the ground and threw it into the valley.
"Cyclopes! I tell you, Stheno, when I destroy Neptune and take over the oceans, we will renegotiate the Cyclopes' labor contract. Ma Gasket will learn her place. Now, what news from the north?"
"The demigods have left for Alaska," Stheno said. "They fly straight to their death. Smaldy death, I mean. Not our prisoner death. Although, I suppose they're flying to him, too."
Polybetes growled.
"Alcyoneus had better spare the son of Neptune as he promised. I want that one chained at my feet, so I can kill him when the time is ripe." His blood shall water the stones of Mount Olympus and wake the Earth Mother. What word from the Amazons?
Only silence, Stheno said. We do not yet know the winner of last night's duel, but it is only a matter of time before Otrera prevails and comes to our aid.
Polybetes absently scratched some vipers out of his hair.
Perhaps it's just as well we wait, then. Tomorrow at sundown is Fortuna's feast. By then, we must invade, Amazons or no. In the meantime, dig in! We set up camp here, on high ground.
Yes, great one, Stheno announced to the troops. Puppies and blankets for everyone!
The monsters cheered. Polybetes spread his hands in front of him, taking in the valley like a panoramic picture.
Yes, blow your little horns, demigods. Soon the legacy of Rome will be destroyed for the last time.
The dream faded. Percy woke with a jolt as the plane started its descent. Hazel laid her hand on his shoulder.
Sleep okay?
Percy sat up groggily. How long was I out? Frank stood in the aisle, wrapping his spear and new bow in his ski bag.
A few hours, he said. We're almost there.
Percy looked out the window. A glittering inlet of the sea snaked between snowy mountains. In the distance, a city was carved out of the wilderness, surrounded by lush green forests on one side and icy black beaches on the other.
Welcome to Alaska, Hazel said.
We're beyond the help of the gods. Chapter 38 Percy. The pilot said the plane couldn't wait for them, but that was okay with Percy. If they survived till the next day, he hoped they could find a different way back, anything but a plane. He should have been depressed. He was stuck in Alaska, the giant's home territory, out of contact with his old friends just as his memories were coming back. He had seen an image of Polybetes' army about to invade Camp Jupiter. He'd learned that the giants planned to use him as some kind of blood sacrifice to awaken Gia. Plus, tomorrow evening was the Feast of Fortuna. He, Frank, and Hazel had an impossible task to complete before then. At best, they would unleash death, who might take Percy's two friends to the underworld. Not much to look forward to. Still, Percy felt strangely invigorated. His dream of Tyson had lifted his spirits. He remembered Tyson, his brother. They'd fought together, celebrated victories, shared good times at Camp Half-Blood. He remembered his home, and that gave him a new determination to succeed. He was fighting for two camps now, two families. Juno had stolen his memory and sent him to Camp Jupiter for a reason. He understood that now. He still wanted to punch her in her godly face, but at least he got her reasoning. If the two camps could work together, they stood a chance of stopping their mutual enemies. Separately, both camps were doomed. There were other reasons Percy wanted to save Camp Jupiter. Reasons he didn't dare put into words. Not yet, anyway. Suddenly he saw a future for himself and for Annabeth that he'd never imagined before. As they took a taxi into downtown Anchorage, Percy told Frank and Hazel about his dreams. They looked anxious, but not surprised when he told them about the giant's army closing in on camp. Frank choked when he heard about Tyson. "You have a half-brother who's a cyclops?"
"Sure," Percy said. "Which makes him your great-great-great..."
"Please,"
Frank covered his ears. "Enough."
"As long as he can get Ella to camp," Hazel said. "I'm worried about her."
Percy nodded. He was still thinking about the lines of prophecy the Harpy had recited, about the son of Neptune drowning and the mark of Athena burning through Rome. He wasn't sure what the first part meant, but he was starting to have an idea about the second. He tried to set the question aside. He had to survive this quest first. The taxi turned on Highway 1, which looked more like a small street to Percy, and took them north toward downtown. It was late afternoon, but the sun was still high in the sky.
"I can't believe how much this place has grown," Hazel muttered.
The taxi driver grinned in the rearview mirror.
"Been a long time since you visited, miss?"
"About 70 years, Hazel said.
The driver slid the glass partition closed and drove on in silence. According to Hazel, almost none of the buildings were the same, but she pointed out features of the landscape, the vast forests ringing the city, the cold, gray waters of Cook Inlet, tracing the north edge of town, and the Chugach Mountains rising grayish-blue in the distance, capped with snow even in June. Percy had never smelled air this clean before. The town itself had a weather-beaten look to it, with closed stores, rusted-out cars, and worn apartment complexes lining the road, but it was still beautiful. Lakes and huge stretches of woods cut through the middle. The Arctic sky was an amazing combination of turquoise and gold. Then there were the giants. Dozens of bright blue men, each 30 feet tall with gray, frosty hair, were wading through the forests, fishing in the bay, and striding across the mountains. The mortals didn't seem to notice them. The taxi passed within a few yards of one who was sitting at the edge of a lake washing his feet, but the driver didn't panic. Frank pointed at the blue guy.
Hyperboreans, Percy said. He was amazed he remembered that name. Northern giants. I fought some when Kronos invaded Manhattan.
Wait, Frank said. When who did what?
Long story. But these guys look, I don't know, peaceful.
They usually are, Hazel agreed. I remember them. They're everywhere in Alaska, like bears.
Bears? Frank said nervously.
The giants are invisible to mortals, Hazel said. They never bothered me, though one almost stepped on me by accident once.
That sounded fairly bothersome to Percy, but the taxi kept driving. None of the giants paid them any attention. One stood right at the intersection of Northern Lights Road, straddling the highway, and they drove between his legs. The Hyperborean was cradling a Native American totem pole wrapped in furs, humming to it like a baby. If the guy hadn't been the size of a building, he would have been almost cute. The taxi drove through downtown, past a bunch of tourist shops advertising furs, Native American art, and gold. Percy hoped Hazel wouldn't get agitated and make the jewelry shops explode. As the driver turned and headed toward the seashore, Hazel knocked on the glass partition.
"Here is good. Can you let us out?"
They paid the driver and stepped onto 4th Street. Compared to Vancouver, downtown Anchorage was tiny, more like a college campus than a city, but Hazel looked amazed.
"It's huge," she said. That's where the Gitchell Hotel used to be. My mom and I stayed there our first week in Alaska. And they've moved City Hall. It used to be there."
She led them in a daze for a few blocks. They didn't really have a plan beyond finding the fastest way to the Hubbard Glacier. But Percy smelled something cooking nearby. Sausage, maybe? He realized he hadn't eaten since that morning at Grandma Jong's.
"Food," he said. "Come on."
They found a cafe right by the beach. It was bustling with people, but they scored a table at the window and perused the menus. Frank whooped with delight.
24-hour breakfast!
"It's like dinner time," Percy said, though he couldn't tell from looking outside. The sun was so high it could have been noon.
"I love breakfast," Frank said. "I'd eat breakfast and breakfast if I could. Though, I'm sure the food here isn't as good as Hazel's."
Hazel elbowed him, but her smile was playful. Seeing them like that made Percy happy. Those two definitely needed to get together. But it also made him sad. He thought about Annabeth and wondered if he'd live long enough to see her again.
"Think positive," he told himself. "You know," he said, "breakfast sounds great."
They all ordered massive plates of eggs, pancakes, and reindeer sausage, though Frank looked a little worried about the reindeer.
"You think it's okay that we're eating Rudolph?"
"Dude," Percy said, "I could eat Prancer and Blitzen, too. I'm hungry."
The food was excellent. Percy had never seen anyone eat as fast as Frank. The red-nosed reindeer did not stand a chance. Between bites of blueberry pancake, Hazel drew a squiggly curve and an X on her napkin.
"So, this is what I'm thinking. We're here," she tapped X, "Anchorage."
"It looks like a seagull's face," Percy said, "and we're the eye."
Hazel glared at him. "It's a map, Percy,
Anchorage is at the top of this sliver of ocean, Cook Inlet. There's a big peninsula of land below us, and my old hometown, Seward, is at the bottom of the peninsula here. She drew another X at the base of the seagull's throat. That's the closest town to the Hubbard Glacier. We could go around by sea, I guess, but it would take forever. We don't have that kind of time.
Frank polished off the last of his Rudolph. But land is dangerous, he said. Land means Gia. Hazel nodded.
I don't see that we've got much choice, though. We could have asked our pilot to fly us down, but I don't know. His plane might be too big for the little Seward airport. And if we chartered another plane...
No more planes, Percy said. Please.
Hazel held up her hand in a placating gesture.
It's okay. There's a train that goes from here to Seward. We might be able to catch one tonight. It only takes a couple of hours.
She drew a dotted line between the two X's.
You just cut off the seagull's head, Percy noted.
Hazel sighed.
It's the train line. Look, from Seward, the Hubbard Glacier is down here somewhere.
She tapped the lower right corner of her napkin.
That's where Alcyoneus is.
But you're not sure how far? Frank asked. Hazel frowned and shook her head.
I'm pretty sure it's only accessible by boat or plane.
Boat,
Percy said immediately.
Fine, Hazel said. It shouldn't be too far from Seward, if we can get to Seward safely.
Percy gazed out the window. So much to do and only 24 hours left. This time tomorrow, the Feast of Fortuna would be starting. Unless they unleashed death and made it back to camp, the giant's army would flood into the valley. The Romans would be the main course at a monster dinner. Across the street, a frosty black sand beach led down to the sea, which was as smooth as steel. The ocean here felt different, still powerful, but freezing, slow, and primal. No gods controlled that water, at least no gods Percy knew. Neptune wouldn't be able to protect him. Percy wondered if he could even manipulate water here, or breathe underwater. A Hyperborean giant lumbered across the street. Nobody in the cafe noticed. The giant stepped into the bay, cracking the ice under his sandals, and thrust his hands in the water. He brought out a killer whale in one fist. Apparently that wasn't what he wanted, because he threw the whale back and kept waiting.
Good breakfast, Frank said.
Who's ready for a train ride?
The station wasn't far. They were just in time to buy tickets for the last train south. As his friends climbed on board, Percy said,
Be with you in a sec,
and ran back into the station. He got change from the gift shop and stood in front of the payphone. He'd never used a payphone before. They were strange antiques to him, like his mom's turntable or his teacher Chiron's Frank Sinatra cassette tapes. He wasn't sure how many coins it would take, or if he could even make a call go through, assuming he remembered the number correctly. Sally Jackson, he thought. That was his mom's name. And he had a stepdad. Paul. What did they think had happened to Percy? Maybe they had already held a memorial service. As near as he could figure, he'd lost 7 months of his life. Sure, most of that had been during the school year, but still, not cool. He picked up the receiver and punched in a New York number, his mom's apartment. Voicemail. Percy should have figured. It would be like midnight in New York. They wouldn't recognize this number. Hearing Paul's voice on the recording hit Percy in the gut so hard, he could barely speak at the tone.
Mom, he said. Hey, I'm alive. Hera put me to sleep for a while, and then she took my memory, and...
His voice faltered. How could he possibly explain all this?
Anyway, I'm okay. I'm sorry, I'm on a quest...
He winced. He shouldn't have said that. His mom knew all about quests, and now she'd be worried.
I'll make it home. I promise. Love you.
He put down the receiver. He stared at the phone, hoping it would ring back. The train whistle sounded. The conductor shouted, All aboard! Percy ran. He made it just as they were pulling up the steps, then climbed to the top of the double-decker car and slid into his seat. Hazel frowned.
You okay?
Yeah, he croaked. just made a call.
She and Frank seemed to get that. They didn't ask for details. Soon they were heading south along the coast, watching the landscape go by. Percy tried to think about the quest, but for an ADHD kid like him, the train wasn't the easiest place to concentrate. Cool things kept happening outside. Bald eagles soared overhead. The train raced over bridges and along cliffs where glacial waterfalls tumbled thousands of feet down the rocks. They passed forests buried in snowdrifts, big artillery guns, to set off small avalanches and prevent uncontrolled ones, Hazel explained, and lakes so clear they reflected the mountains like mirrors, so the world looked upside down. Brown bears lumbered through the meadows. Hyperborean giants kept appearing in the strangest places. One was lounging in a lake like it was a hot tub. Another was using a pine tree as a toothpick. A third sat in a snowdrift, playing with two live moose like they were action figures. The train was full of tourists, oohing and aahing and snapping pictures. But Percy felt sorry they couldn't see the Hyperboreans. They were missing the really good shots. Meanwhile, Frank studied a map of Alaska that he'd found in the seat pocket. He located Hubbard Glacier, which looked discouragingly far away from Seward. He kept running his finger along the coastline, frowning with concentration.
"What are you thinking?" Percy asked.
"Just possibilities," Frank said. Percy didn't know what that meant, but he let it go. After about an hour, Percy started to relax. They bought hot chocolate from the dining car. The seats were warm and comfortable, and he thought about taking a nap. Then a shadow passed overhead. Tourists murmured in excitement and started taking pictures.
"Eagle!"
one yelled.
"Eagle!"
said another.
"Huge eagle!"
said a third.
"That's no eagle," Frank said.
Percy looked up just in time to see the creature make a second pass. It was definitely larger than an eagle, with a sleek black body the size of a Labrador retriever. Its wingspan was at least 10 feet across.
"There's another one," Frank pointed. "Strike that. 3, 4.
"Okay, we're in trouble."
The creatures circled the train like vultures, delighting the tourists. Percy wasn't delighted. The monsters had glowing red eyes, sharp beaks, and vicious talons. Percy felt for his pen in his pocket.
"Those things look familiar."
"Seattle," Hazel said. "The Amazons had one in a cage. They're..."
Then several things happened at once. The emergency brake screeched, pitching them forward. Tourists screamed and tumbled through the aisles. The monsters swooped down, shattering the glass roof of the car, and the entire train toppled off the rails. Chapter 39. Percy. Percy went weightless. His vision blurred. Claws grabbed his arms and lifted him into the air. Below, train wheels squealed and metal crashed. Glass shattered. Passengers screamed. When his eyesight cleared, he saw the beast that was carrying him aloft. It had the body of a panther, sleek, black, and feline, with the wings and head of an eagle. Its eyes glowed blood red. Percy squirmed. The monster's front talons were wrapped around his arms like steel bands. He couldn't free himself or reach his sword. He rose higher and higher in the cold wind. Percy had no idea where the monster was taking him, but he was pretty sure he wouldn't like it when he got there. He yelled, mostly out of frustration. Then something whistled by his ear. An arrow sprouted from the monster's neck. The creature shrieked and let go. Percy fell, crashing through tree branches until he slammed into a snowbank. He groaned, looking up at a massive pine tree he'd just shredded. He managed to stand. Nothing seemed broken. Frank stood to his left, shooting down the creatures as fast as he could. Hazel was at his back, swinging her sword at any monster that came close. But there were too many swarming around them, at least a dozen. Percy drew Riptide. He sliced the wing off one monster and sent it spiraling into a tree, then sliced through another that burst into dust. But the defeated ones began to reform immediately.
"What are these things?" he yelled.
"Griffins," Hazel said. "We have to get them away from the train."
Percy saw what she meant. The train cars had fallen over, and their roofs had shattered. Tourists were stumbling around in shock. Percy didn't see anybody seriously injured, but the griffins were swooping toward anything that moved. The only thing keeping them away from the mortals was a glowing gray warrior in camouflage. Frank's pet Spartus. Percy glanced over and noticed Frank's spear was gone.
Used your last charge?
Yeah, Frank shot another griffin out of the sky.
I had to help the mortals. The spear just dissolved.
Percy nodded. Part of him was relieved. He didn't like the skeleton warrior. Part of him was disappointed, because that was one less weapon they had at their disposal. But he didn't fault Frank. Frank had done the right thing.
Let's move the fight, Percy said. Away from the tracks.
They stumbled through the snow, smacking and slicing griffins that reformed from dust every time they were killed. Percy had had no experience with griffins. He'd always imagined them as huge noble animals, like lions with wings. But these things reminded him more of vicious pack hunters, flying hyenas. About 50 yards from the tracks, the trees gave way to an open marsh. The ground was so spongy and icy, Percy felt like he was racing across bubble wrap. Frank was running out of arrows. Hazel was breathing hard. Percy's own sword swings were getting slower. He realized they were alive only because the griffins weren't trying to kill them. The griffins wanted to pick them up and carry them off somewhere.
Maybe to their nests, Percy thought.
Then he tripped over something in the tall grass, a circle of scrap metal about the size of a tractor tire. It was a massive bird's nest, a griffin's nest. The bottom littered with old pieces of jewelry, an imperial gold dagger, a dented centurion's badge, and two pumpkin-sized eggs that looked like real gold. Percy jumped into the nest. He pressed his sword tip against one of the eggs.
Back off, or I break it.
The griffin squawked angrily. They buzzed around the nest and snapped their beaks, but they didn't attack. Hazel and Frank stood back to back with Percy, their weapons ready.
Griffins collect gold, Hazel said. They're crazy for it. Look, more nests over there.
Frank knocked his last arrow.
So if these are their nests, where were they trying to take Percy? That thing was flying away with him.
Percy's arm still throbbed where the griffin had grabbed him.
Alcyoneus, he guessed. Maybe they're working for him. Are these things smart enough to take orders?
I don't know, Hazel said. I never fought them when I lived here. I just read about them at camp.
Weaknesses? Frank asked. Please tell me they have weaknesses.
Hazel scowled.
Horses. They hate horses. Natural enemies or something. I wish Orion was here.
The griffins shrieked. They swirled around the nest with their red eyes glowing.
Guys, Frank said nervously, I see Legion relics in this nest.
I know, Percy said.
That means other demigods died here, or...
Frank, it'll be okay, Percy promised.
One of the griffins dived in. Percy raised his sword, ready to stab the egg. The monster veered off. But the other griffins were losing their patience. Percy couldn't keep this standoff going much longer. He glanced around the fields, desperately trying to formulate a plan. About a quarter mile away, a Hyperborean giant was sitting in the bog, peacefully picking mud from between his toes with a broken tree trunk.
I've got an idea, Percy said. Hazel, all the gold in these nests, do you think you can use it to cause a distraction?
I guess...
Just give us enough time for a head start. When I say go, run for that giant.
Frank gaped at him.
You want us to run toward a giant?
Trust me, Percy said. Ready? Go!
Hazel thrust her hand upward. From a dozen nests across the marsh, golden objects shot into the air. Jewelry, weapons, coins, gold nuggets, and most importantly, griffin eggs. The monster shrieked and flew after their eggs, frantic to save them. Percy and his friends ran. Their feet splashed and crunched through the frozen marsh. Percy poured on speed, but he could hear the griffins closing behind them, and now the monsters were really angry. The giant hadn't noticed the commotion yet. He was inspecting his toes for mud, his face sleepy and peaceful, his white whiskers glistening with ice crystals. Around his neck was a necklace of found objects,
garbage cans, car doors, moose antlers, camping equipment, even a toilet. Apparently, he'd been cleaning up the wilderness. Percy hated to disturb him, especially since it meant taking shelter under the giant's thighs. But they didn't have much choice.
Under, he told his friends. Crawl under.
They scrambled between the massive blue leg and flattened themselves in the mud, crawling as close as they could to his loincloth. Percy tried to breathe through his mouth, but it wasn't the most pleasant hiding spot.
What's the plan? Frank hissed. Get flattened by a blue rump?
Lay low, Percy said. Only move if you have to.
The griffins arrived in a wave of angry beaks, talons, and wings, swarming around the giant, trying to get under his legs. The giant rumbled in surprise. He shifted. Percy had to roll to avoid getting crushed by his large, hairy rear. The Hyperborean grunted, a little more irritated. He swatted at the griffins, but they squawked in outrage and began pecking at his legs and hands.
Roo!
The giant bellowed.
Roo!
He took a deep breath and blew out a wave of cold air. Even under the protection of the giant's legs, Percy could feel the temperature drop. The griffin's shrieking stopped abruptly, replaced by the thunk, thunk, thunk of heavy objects hitting the mud.
Come on, Percy told his friends. Carefully.
They squirmed out from under the giant. All around the marsh, trees were glazed with frost. A huge swath of the bog was covered in fresh snow. Frozen griffins stuck out of the ground like feathery popsicle sticks, their wings still spread, beaks open, eyes wide with surprise. Percy and his friends scrambled away, trying to keep out of the giant's vision, but the big guy was too busy to notice them. He was trying to figure out how to string a frozen griffin onto his necklace.
Percy, Hazel wiped the ice and mud from her face. How did you know the giant could do that?
I almost got hit by Hyperborean breath once, he said. We'd better move. The griffins won't stay frozen forever.
Chapter 40 Percy They walked overland for about an hour, keeping the train tracks in sight but staying in the cover of the trees as much as possible. Once they heard a helicopter flying in the direction of the train wreck. Twice they heard the screech of griffins, but they sounded a long way off. As near as Percy could figure, it was about midnight when the sun finally set. It got cold in the woods. The stars were so thick, Percy was tempted to stop and gawk at them. Then the northern lights cranked up. They reminded Percy of his mom's gas stovetop back home, when she had the flame on low, waves of ghostly blue flames rippling back and forth.
That's amazing, Frank said.
Bears, Hazel pointed. Sure enough, a couple of brown bears were lumbering in the meadow a few hundred feet away, their coats gleaming in the starlight.
They won't bother us, Hazel promised. Just give them a wide berth.
Percy and Frank didn't argue. As they trudged on, Percy thought about all the crazy places he'd seen. None of them had left him speechless like Alaska. He could see why it was a land beyond the gods. Everything here was rough and untamed. There were no rules, no prophecies, no destinies. Just the harsh wilderness and a bunch of animals and monsters. Mortals and demigods came here at their own risk. Percy wondered if this was what Gia wanted. For the whole world to be like this. He wondered if that would be such a bad thing. Then he put the thought aside. Gia wasn't a gentle goddess. Percy had heard what she planned to do. She wasn't like the Mother Earth you might read about in a children's fairy tale. She was vengeful and violent. If she ever woke up fully, she'd destroy human civilization. After another couple of hours, they stumbled across a tiny village between the railroad tracks and a two-lane road. The city limit sign said, Moose Pass. Standing next to the sign was an actual moose. For a second, Percy thought it might be some sort of statue for advertising. Then the animal bounded into the woods. They passed a couple of houses, a post office, and some trailers. Everything was dark and closed up. On the other end of town was a store with a picnic table
and an old rusted petrol pump in front. The store had a hand-painted sign that read, Moose Pass Gas.
That's just wrong, Frank said.
By silent agreement, they collapsed around the picnic table. Percy's feet felt like blocks of ice, very sore blocks of ice. Hazel put her head in her hands and passed out, snoring. Frank took out his last sodas and some granola bars from the train ride and shared them with Percy. They ate in silence, watching the stars, until Frank said,
Did you mean what you said earlier?
Percy looked across the table.
About what?
In the starlight, Frank's face might have been alabaster, like an old Roman statue.
About being proud that we're related.
Percy tapped his granola bar on the table.
Well, let's see. You single-handedly took out three basilisks while I was sipping green tea and wheat germ. You held off an army of Lestragonians so that our plane could take off in Vancouver. You saved my life by shooting down that griffin, and you gave up the last charge on your magic spear to help some defenseless mortals. You are, hands down, the nicest child of the war god I've ever met. Maybe the only nice one. So what do you think?
Frank stared up at the northern lights, still cooking across the stars on low heat.
It's just, I was supposed to be in charge of this quest, the Centurion and all. I feel like you guys have had to carry me.
Not true, Percy said.
I'm supposed to have these powers I haven't figured out how to use, Frank said bitterly. Now I don't have a spear, and I'm almost out of arrows, and I'm scared.
I'd be worried if you weren't scared, Percy said. We're all scared.
But the Feast of Fortuna is...
Frank thought about it.
It's after midnight, isn't it?
That means it's June 24th now. The feast starts tonight at sundown. We have to find our way to Hubbard Glacier, defeat a giant who is undefeatable in his home territory, and get back to Camp Jupiter before they're overrun. All in less than 18 hours.
And when we free Thanatos, Percy said, he might claim your life. And Hazel's. Believe me, I've been thinking about it.
Frank gazed at Hazel, still snoring lightly. Her face was buried under a mass of curly brown hair.
She's my best friend, Frank said. I lost my mom, my grandmother. I can't lose her, too.
Percy thought about his old life. His mom in New York, Camp Half-Blood, Annabeth. He'd lost all of that for 8 months. Even now, with the memories coming back, he'd never been this far away from home before. He'd been to the underworld and back. He'd faced death dozens of times. But sitting at this picnic table, thousands of miles away, beyond the power of Olympus, he'd never been so alone. Except for Hazel and Frank.
I'm not going to lose either of you, he promised. I'm not going to let that happen. And Frank, you are a leader. Hazel would say the same thing. We need you.
Frank lowered his head. He seemed lost in thought. Finally, he leaned forward until his head bumped the picnic table. He started to snore in harmony with Hazel. Percy sighed.
Another inspiring speech from Jackson, he said to himself. Rest up, Frank. Big day ahead.
At dawn, the store opened up. The owner was a little surprised to find three teenagers crashed out on his picnic table, but when Percy explained that they had stumbled away from last night's train wreck, the guy felt sorry for them and treated them to breakfast. He called a friend of his, an Inuit native who had a cabin close to Seward. Soon they were rumbling along the road in a beat-up Ford pickup that had been new about the time Hazel was born. Hazel and Frank sat in back. Percy rode up front with a leathery old man, who smelled like smoked salmon. He told Percy stories about bear and raven, the Inuit gods, and all Percy could think was that he hoped he didn't meet them. He had enough enemies already. The truck broke down a few miles outside Seward. The driver didn't seem surprised, as though this happened to him several times a day. He said they could wait for him to fix the engine, but since Seward was only a few miles away, they decided to walk it. By mid-morning, they climbed over a rise in the road and saw a small bay ringed with mountains. The town was a thin crescent on the right-hand shore, with wharves extending into the water and a cruise ship in the harbor. Percy shuddered. He'd had bad experiences with cruise ships.
"Seward,"
Hazel said. She didn't sound happy to see her.